accession number 31509, rail 9.
That must have been very important for you.
Oh, of course it was.
Had a squadron again.
Oh, absolutely. I never had had a squadron, you see. I'd been one of the flight commanders.
Quite, yes. This was your own squadron.
This
now.
Was my own squadron. I was now a CEO. And I was promoted from flight lieutenant to squadron leader.
But what a miraculous
unbelievable.
Sounds.
Unbelievable. I don't know why. Obviously, just.
And very moving it must have been, those two incidents of the ring and the watch.
Well, the
and
ring
the clock.
And being offered a squadron were moving. The rest, to me, was something that happened. I was very lucky. But to this girl. Made it easier, very easy to look at, and her mother, one, as you say, and the other was, and the third, of course, the devotion of the pilots that came back the next day, that accurately pinpointed the thing, so they practically landed where they came with to the Jeep, across country, not easy keeping a correct direction, across country with paddy fields, with twisted and turned paths and that, to get to the right place, they could have got to within a mile of it. So they got to almost to the exact spot, and they were asking the village, could anybody tell them where this had taken place? Well, there were only scattered bits. There was nothing, no real aircraft crash or burnt sight to see was there.
Gavin Douglas, Reel 9.
Well, after the accident had taken place, I was sent back, as I've just said, and given another plane. And I flew the rest of the war and eventually left the Air Force a year and a half after. You see, there's an awful lot of history in between.
Oh, I shall do that. We'll come back to that, Gavin.
Right.
But this sort of finishes up
we're jumping ahead now.
Yes, but I shall cover that.
Right. Right. Let's start again then.
I don't really want to because it would be difficult.
Okay, I'll just go ahead.
If you just carry on.
Yes. All right. Several years later, when I was out of the Air Force and the Army and working in Calcutta in the office of a big shipping company, I saw an advertisement in the Calcutta papers that two well-known film people were coming to Calcutta, coming to try and find a girl to play the part of Win Min Tan, who was the girl that was involved in the film. We're looking for a girl of Burmese or Anglo-Burmese appearance who could take part in a film with Gregory Peck. Called The Purple Plane, a book by, I can't remember his name at the moment.
I know
it as well as my own. And I thought, I was very interested in photography by then. I had my Rolleiflex camera, and I loved photographing everything I could. And I thought, I remember some very pretty girls in Calcutta, in Burma. I'm sure one of them could be found because they want the genuine thing. They don't want an English girl or French girl disguised as Burmese. It all looks so phony. And we had a Burmese assistant in the office who was learning from the head office his duties when he went back to Rangoon. And his name, he was a Christian, Burmese Christian. His name was George Ongun. And I said to George, I remember when I was operating in Burma, seeing beautiful village girls, some are looking very good class, who, would love to get into a film opposite Gregory Peck. Do you know of any such people who speak English and who might fit the part? And he said, I said, I know a girl here in Calcutta, and I photographed her, and she was dressed in Burmese costume. She absolutely loved it. But when they gave her a film test, it didn't come over as it should have done, so they were still looking. So I said, yes, I'll give you the names of two or three that I know of. And he gave me the name of one girl called Helga Johnston. That was her English name. Her mother was a Shan Burmese, which is in the Shan Mountains of eastern Burma. And her father was an Irishman. And Helga Johnston, whose English name was Helga Johnston, is very attractive. She's about 19. And she might be a family you could approach. And he said, there's another girl. Oh, why do I dry up on these moments?
The name will come.
It will do.
Yes.
Who is the daughter of one of the last wives of King Thibaw of Burma, who had, let's face it, 3,000 wives or 300 wives, I don't know. They were all called wives anyway. And then he gave me one other whose name I completely forgot. I had a little leave due to me, and so I took passage of one of our steamers that went up and down the coast from Burma to Singapore and round to Hong Kong to go down to Rangoon, where it stopped, its first stop, and caught the next one coming back a week later. And in that week I was in Rangoon searching for these girls and photographing them. And it couldn't have been made more easy in those days. Rangoon was a mess, as it still is. They had not yet filled the potholes and roads which were caused by Japanese and English bombs, British bombs when the Japanese first entered Burma in 1942, and when they were driven out by us later. The feckless sort of people, I thought. The Burmese women and the Burmese men are races apart, I thought. The Burmese women do all the work in all areas of life, do all the work in Burma. The men sit back and smoke white cheroots and do nothing. That's as it was. And there was a very wealthy Burmese who were tax collectors and government servants who got stipends and who did nothing for them. I despise the Burmese, most Burmese men. Having said which, of course, I only had a very small, limited knowledge of them. There were many in the monasteries amongst the monks and that I never met. And many others, of course, I didn't meet in that short time. But those I met, I thought, pretty poor against their women folk, who were quite different. And it had nothing to do with sex. It had to do with everything else, the approachability and vivacity and friendliness and so on and so forth. I contacted June May, one of the girls, whose name I couldn't remember just now, who it turned out was the daughter of one of King Thibaw's last wives, who had married an Australian jockey. And so she was partly Australian and partly Burmese. June Rose Bellamy. Bellamy was quite a well-known Australian jockey, and anyway, he left behind him a delightful girl, very fair skin, and not really Burmese looking, but of course she was Burmese, especially when she wore her Burmese clothes. I'll show you a picture of her after we finish talking. And I never met the mother until the end, but I got her to do this, and we were going out to various places to take photographs of you, and I told her what it was all about, and she was very excited for this. And I said, if you're willing to do it, I'll send the photo to the Arthur Rank organization, and they will then decide whether or not you'll be invited to go and see them for an interview and a test. And you speak to your mummy about it, and so on and so forth, which she did, and she was ready the next day. I then met the mother, who looked very Germanic, although she was half Burmese. And she said, "Who are you?" And I said, "Well, I'll tell her the story very, very briefly." And I took Helga, I'm sorry, to the Royal Lake at Kokai, near the Schwedagon Pagoda, and took photographs of her inside the pagoda. And I took to the Royal Lakes at Kokai, and she's wearing a lungi. And I said, "Look, do you know if you could go and immerse yourself in the lake and come out soaking wet, and I'll take photographs of your clothes clinging, your lungi clinging to you." Said, "It could make don't get your hair wet. It could make a very effective picture." And she agreed. She was a marvelous model. She'd never been photographed in her life. And I took these pictures, and they were very, very good, I thought. And
is this related to your story in the your plane crash, the whole incident? Is this, I was wondering...
She was being chosen for a part of God.
Yes.
In the purple plane. Which
yes.
Is in which there was an accident, very similar to my accident.
I see. This is how it related. Yes.
Come in, darling.
I have some tea. Do you have
10 minutes, though, darling.
10 minutes.
Yeah. Wait till I call you.
Yes.
Thank you, Anne.
And it was what I saw in this girl something of what I'd seen in the girl who came to my rescue, and in the story, that is. And I thought, let's find a girl like her if we can, which is why I did this excursion to Calcutta. I'm sorry if I didn't make that clear. Is it all right?
Yes. I wanted to make absolutely explicit on here.
Yes.
Otherwise people will think, what is the relevance of your
yes.
of this film
yes.
story, you see? Yes.
It was in the back of my mind. I'd had this similar accident, although in the film it's a bowfighter, and there's a second pilot and a person they're giving a lift to, whereas I was in my single-seater fighter.
Did they know of your accident there, the filmmakers?
No.
No, it was just a coincidence.
No, they were looking for a girl. They didn't know me from Adam. They didn't know who I was. They didn't even know anything about this until they got the photograph saying that I'm sending you some photographs of a girl who you might consider suitable for the part. They never paid me for them. And I never saw them, but when I went to London, they were doing some of the scenes on the sets. I went in there and sat in Gregory Peck's chair and watched the scene. And that was the first time and the last time I saw anybody to do with the Arthur organization. I never got a penny out of it.
So who did they choose? Did they choose one of these?
In the long, they chose Helga Johnston. June Rose Bellamy looked so... Well, she was a daughter of an Aussie jockey. She looked so English or Western, I should say Western, although Australia's not in the West. She didn't look like a Burmese girl, although she was half Burmese, just as Helga Johnston was, who did look like a Burmese girl, and who was also really lovely.
And I believe you found out what had happened in your crash later, much later, to your neck. Am I right?
That came about this time. Just a little after this, I suddenly started getting neck pains. Well, I took the pictures and we sent them to the ring. And she, to cut a long story short, she was sent for, filmed, and they chose her to play opposite Gregory Peck. Later on, I saw her in London, on the set, doing some of the indoor scenes that could be done. The full story, Helga. The purple plane, part of which you pay, is still available, I think. As far as I was concerned, that was it. I still have photographs of that I took, or copies of them, and life went on as well. When suddenly one day I started getting terrible pains in my neck and down the left-hand side of my body, but not down my arm or anything like that. It was really in my neck. I couldn't believe it. It was so painful that I could not lie down because it was painful in that position. It was more comfortable than vertical when all the vertebrae were sitting on top of each other than when instead of when I lay down and they toppled. And I didn't know what had happened. And I was being given morphine injections. They didn't x-ray me at first. I went into a hospital in Calcutta. They were giving me morphine injections because the pain was so great, 24 hours a day. And I was there for about a week or 10 days. Before they x-rayed me, and when they saw the x-rays, they said, "When did you break your neck?" Well, I had no idea that this neck pain was connected with my crash, and I'd forgotten about the air crash in relevance to the pain. And they say, "Oh, yes, you did. The damage to your neck is very compatible with something, an accident that must have happened 6 or 8 years ago, because it takes 6 to 8 years to develop." Many, many cases happened in the war, people falling out of tanks or back of trucks, falling awkwardly, jumping out in a hurry and all that sort of thing, and they fell over and they damaged the vertebra. And what has happened is you damaged two of your vertebra in this crash when you were being thrown around inside the aircraft. And since that time, it takes about 4, 5, 6, 7 years to develop. The ossification that goes on when nature is repairing the damaged vertebra, which was cracked, it wasn't actually broken in half, anything like that, happens now to be in the area where your brachial nerve passes between the two vertebra, and it's pinching it, and that is what's causing all the pain. And I said, "What can be done about that?" And they said, "Well, the only thing that we can do is to cut open the neck and scrape away the ossification and release the pressure on the brain." And I was ready for that. Mentally, I didn't have any other solution. But it just so happens that a friend of mine and her husband mentioned this to an Indian osteopath in Calcutta, that I have having these pains. And he said to them, "This sounds to me a very interesting case." He said, "Tell the poor man to come and see me. And if I can make the right diagnosis, I can, within 24 hours, half the pain will have gone. And in 5 days to 6 days, it will be gone forever and never come back." Well, this sounded like voodoo stuff to me. It was certainly, I would have tried anything, Christian science, anything, pain was so great. And I certainly wasn't prepared to be cajoled into doing something that I thought was silly. But she was so earnest that this chap could do that. He'd done those very good things for her husband. So I agreed to go along and see him. And we had a very long interview. It went on for several hours, in which he asked me so many questions about my way of life, my character, my thoughts, my wishes, my reactions, whether I was quick-tempered or bad-tempered, which was quite a difference, whether I was slow to anger, whether I was quick to jump onto things or rather slow, whether I evaluated things carefully before I did them, or whether I would do things on the spur of the moment, all these things which made up one's character. And he said, "This is very important, you know, in homeopathy, I said osteopathy before.
I was going to query it. I thought you said yes.
Homeopathy. And he said, "Because you must," he told me a little bit about homeopathy, and homeopathy, and he said, "If I can make a right diagnosis from my chart of your being, which can be quite different to somebody else's, I can find the right pills for it, the right medicines for it, the right homeopathic drugs," I think he said, for it. And, you know, he said, "I can only take on cases like yours about one in a week, because there's so much research to be done, putting you into each characteristic, and marrying them all with the others and getting it exactly right." And at the end of a week, he saw me, and he said, "I have the medicines ready for you." He said, if you do what I say, within 24 hours, half the pain will have gone. Within 5 days, it will have gone forever. Never come back. Unless you do something which may bring it back. In that case, you must come and see me immediately. It all sounded hullabaloo. Not hullabaloo. A lot of nonsense to me. But I took these little pills, which were hardly visible. They were so small. 5 of them. And the next day, half the pain had gone. And a week later, it had gone completely. And I'd completely forgotten about the injunction about being careful. I was swimming one day at the Calcutta Swimming Club, and playing around with some children who wanted to be thrown up into the air and flopped back into the water. And one of them said, oh, throw me up again, uncle, or something, which I did. And she landed on my shoulder, and the pain immediately came back. And I went and, it was only momentary, but I went and saw Dr. Roy, as his name was, and I said, I'd been silly. It was 3 months ago that you saw me, and I told him what had happened. And he said, don't, I'm glad you came. He gave me his Amon. I've never had the trouble again since. X-rays later showed that the complete healing process had gone on. The crack was virtually invisible in the X-rays. I'm not talking about X-rays, I'm talking about MRI now, which I had done in America years later. They said, you have a terrible spine. It's been very badly damaged at different parts of your life. But the crash, which I told them about, they said, it's so evident from the lordosis and the scoliosis and all the other osis that they told me about, that the spine was now suffering. It was a result of the bashing around it had years ago, and the way it had compensated to avoid increasing pain. So that's the story about my broken neck.
Thank you very much indeed, Gavin. And this is the end of Reel 8 and 9, Gavin Douglas.